Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barath, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. Courtney Jacobs is a senior associate with Great Schools Partnership. She's had 16 years of teaching and leading experience in progressive public schools across the country in a variety of content areas and grade levels. She's also served as an adjunct instructor of applied mathematics at Brown University and was a recipient of a Raytheon Math Heroes Award and the Unsung Heroine Award for women who have inspired young women of color at the University of Rhode Island. Courtney, thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Right now, you're working with the New England Secondary School Consortium on supporting schools and teachers with implementing competency-based learning. Could you start by defining what competency-based learning means?
So I'll start by saying that you hear different words and phrases used in different places. So we hear competency, mastery, proficiency. A lot of that's based on what state you're in or what city you're in, but they all mean the same thing. So they're all about ensuring that students are able to acquire and demonstrate skills and knowledge over time.
So if it's implemented well, how does competency-based learning lead to deeper learning and more equitable outcomes for all students?
So I would say that to begin with, it seems pretty obvious. It seems like, of course, we want to know what students know and are able to do. But when we actually do that work in school, I think it's a little more complicated than it seems. So when implemented well, I think the power of competency-based learning or proficiency-based learning is getting really clear, ideally pre-K through 12th grade, about what we want our students to know and be able to do by the time they graduate from high school. And so having those outcomes helps to ensure equity among students so that we've all agreed on sort of what's the base level of those skills and knowledge that we want our students to leave our elementary schools, middle schools, and then high schools with, and also opens up the opportunity for us to think about different ways that students might be able to get there.
So how does this differ from what a traditional school does that isn't proficiency or competency based?
I mean, first I would say that there's probably some practices that are already happening. I mean, there are practices already happening in schools and classrooms that I would say are proficiency-based. They may not have been labeled that way, but I think what's different is really paying attention to students being able to demonstrate their skills and knowledge rather than paying as much attention to the experiences that students have endured, is sort of the way that we put it. So it's not about how many minutes a student sat in a class or even necessarily about which particular courses they took. It's about, you know, how was that time spent, what were the courses, and then what were the skills and knowledge that students gained in those courses, and how do we know that they really own those skills and knowledge? So what is it that we're measuring, and how do we measure it to make sure and ensure that students actually have those skills, rather than just saying they sat in this math class, so yes, they have these algebra skills. How do we know? How are we paying attention to those skills and knowledge?
So it's a fundamental shift between seeing the educational experience as students have taken these courses, had these experiences, therefore are ready to graduate. Now we're thinking of it as students can do these things. They have this knowledge and they have these skills, therefore they're ready for the world outside of K through 12.
Exactly. And one of the implications for that is about time. That's a piece of it. So there may be students who are able to acquire and sort of demonstrate some of these skills faster than other students, and so that sort of comes up as a piece of it, but that it really opens up flexibility in terms of thinking about different ways that students might also be able to gain the skills and knowledge and then also demonstrate those skills and knowledge.
So you work with a lot of teachers and with school leaders in implementing competency-based learning. Talk a little bit about the work you do and then what you're helping these teachers implement in their classrooms.
So a lot of the work that I do to begin with is helping schools and districts define what their graduation standards are. So we know that there are standards. The schools that we work with are working from Common Core standards, NGSS, but really spending some time thinking about what do we want our graduates to know and be able to do, and getting really clear about what that would look like for a student who's graduating from high school. And then we spend some time breaking down what that looks like at different grade levels. So really thinking about what we call performance indicators. So when teachers are assessing students summatively, what is it that they're looking for those students to know and be able to do? And even just that process of defining those things clearly with teachers is a pretty amazing experience in terms of those teachers getting a chance to talk to each other about what their goals and expectations are for students, getting on the same page about what those goals are, and then getting really clear about what that might look like at an elementary school level versus a middle school level versus a high school level.
So if you're a teacher who doesn't have the great fortune of working with you or the Greater Schools Partnership and is interested in starting to think through how this might look in their classroom, what steps would you suggest they take?
So there are lots of great organizations and resources out there that I could certainly point to. But in terms of thinking about actual practice in the classroom, I mean, one specific step that I've seen teachers take on their own is even just reorganizing their grade book. So rather than having their grade book be connected to specific assignments, they'll target which are the standards or skills that I'm targeting in this assignment. And so even though it's a pretty small shift, it sort of shifts that mindset to really paying attention to what the skills are that students are demonstrating and how a student's doing on those skills or that particular knowledge. And so the assignment becomes the afterthought. The skill and the knowledge becomes sort of the organizing principle. I think also, you know, some basic things in terms of setting up classroom learning environment. So, you know, thinking about structures to put in place in a classroom that promote collaboration, higher order thinking, sort of all of those best practices that we've talked about for a long time in classrooms, but that are really closely linked to competency-based learning in terms of helping students actually achieve the outcomes that we've agreed on for them.
So you brought up a great example of changing how you think about assessing students and communicating grades. Once a school or a classroom has set up a clear sense of what the competencies are for their students, what are some other ways that a classroom changes once you've got that sort of baseline in place?
So one of the first questions that teachers ask is about the pacing question of, okay, so if some students really get this idea quickly and other students are struggling, what am I gonna do about that? Some of those pieces in terms of how to structure a classroom are pretty helpful in terms of thinking about things like stations or, you know, space for students to have one-on-ones with teachers, even retakes and revision policies. So what are the different structures that are going to be set up in a classroom and ideally in a school and a district that will allow students the time and opportunity to actually improve their performance in these skills and knowledge over time? And also allow students who have acquired them maybe more quickly to go beyond and think about how to deepen their learning even more or potentially to move on to other topics, skills, knowledge.
So it sounds like once you've determined that your assessment and overall objectives are competency-based, it allows for a lot more flexibility in terms of student pacing, in terms of sometimes the content that they learn, if you're shooting for a skill objective, and the depth to which different students go with a particular topic. So what other skills or strategies, you know, would teachers have to develop and work on in order to pull that off well? Because that's sometimes a whole nother set of skills that doesn't come with your, you know, diploma from teaching school.
Absolutely. So, I mean, lots of different pieces, but, you know, one I would say is thinking about classroom management. Yes, always in terms of, you know, there's that piece about behavior, but really thinking about classroom management through the lens of competency. So thinking about some of those questions I mentioned before and kind of preparing for them, offering students up the opportunity to get assistance, to move ahead. And then, you know, often when I talk about pathways, I remind teachers and administrators that when we talk about pathways, we're not just talking about pathways in a school, but also what are the pathways in your classroom. So thinking about what are the resources that as a teacher you might gather that allow you to offer students opportunities to get at a particular skill in a different way? So that might be something that's computer-based. It might be something that's, you know, a different reading from another student. It might be a different project, a different topic. But there are certainly lots of different skills for a teacher to develop that aren't necessarily what we've traditionally thought about in the past as the skills that a teacher might have.
So it sounds like teachers need to be a little entrepreneurial and creative when the onus is on them to create a competency-based classroom to provide different pathways. Could you paint us a visual of what that classroom looked like?
Yeah, so first I would say, I think once teachers sort of get excited about the idea of competency-based learning, it opens up a whole new world of opportunity and creativity for them to really think about things in a different way. I've certainly worked with plenty of teachers who've, you know, thought about and worked on sort of changing the way that their classroom operates. But one teacher who stands out to me that I've been working with recently is a math teacher. And so she's really been embracing the idea of thinking about math and math assessment in a really different way. And so rather than the traditional test that she gave in the past, she's been working with her students on implementing projects in math. And so all of the work that they've been doing, or the majority of the work that they've been doing in terms of summative assessment, is project-based. That's a really new experience, not just for her, but for the students, obviously. And so that allows students an opportunity oftentimes to collaborate, to think about applying math, to get more excited and engaged in the math work that they're doing, build their confidence. And so she's really approached the idea of competency through that lens of project-based learning. And through that sort of avenue has opened up an opportunity for students to be able to sometimes work at a different pace, oftentimes get more one-on-one help or small group help, and really think about and work on applying their skills in a more authentic way than they ever have before in her classroom.
That's great. It sounds like a classroom I'd like to be in.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've seen misconceptions about what competency-based learning is, working with schools, and also misimplementation. Can you describe some of these pitfalls that hopefully we'll all avoid?
Yeah, so a few of them. I think, you know, one piece is, and we start with standards, and sometimes people think about that as standardization. So I would say that's one misconception that, as I said before, you know, we really think about competency through the lens of opening up opportunities and pathways for students rather than standardizing. I think sometimes when people think about competency-based learning, they think specifically about pacing. And so we say that's an element, that's something that's sort of inherent that you'll have to think about as a teacher. And an administrator potentially when you're thinking about competency, but it's not just about pacing. It's really about a lot more than pacing. It's really thinking about and providing opportunities for students to build their skills and knowledge over time and to be able to demonstrate them consistently. Oftentimes we also hear competency-based learning linked very closely to computer-based or sort of digital, and you know, so we would say, or blended learning, so we would say, yes, those are all great tools to get at competency-based learning, but not the only tools. And so, you know, there's certainly a link there, but one does not equal the other. Finally, I would say that, you know, in some schools that move to competency pretty early on and got too specific about the skills and knowledge that they wanted their students to acquire, sort of a laundry list of things became pretty overwhelming, and again, sort of instead of opening up opportunity and pathways, sort of shut those things down. So I think all of those are sort of lessons learned both by my colleagues at Great Schools Partnership and by people in the field in terms of teachers and administrators that we work with.
And what would you say to a teacher who either predicts or experiences that when they shift to competency-based learning, most of their students start failing? Mm-hmm. And maybe most of their students who are low income or students of color are doing worse in their classroom than they had been before. That might seem on the surface to cut against this argument for competency-based learning.
Right.
Or so, special ed students, I'll add to that too.
Exactly. So, I mean, a couple of things I would say. First, that's one of the first questions that comes up, you know, especially given the demographics of some of the schools that I work with. Usually the first question I ask back when that question comes up is, what were you doing before? And that's where I sort of get at this with the equity lens of, you know, these were questions that always existed, and now we're bringing them to the surface by actually paying attention to what students know and are able to do. And so if we can streamline our efforts, I mean, I like to use that word a lot. So, you know, pre-K through 12th grade, if we can all be really clear about what it is that we're shooting for, we have a much better chance of actually helping our students graduate with those skills and knowledge that we're saying they're graduating with now, but that we want to ensure they actually have. I mean, that's the equity piece, is that rather than just saying that by going through the sequence of courses or spending a certain amount of time in school, that students are ready for college, career, and citizenship, we're actually ensuring that through the experiences that students have and through assessments that are actually targeted at the skills and knowledge that we're aiming for students to achieve.
So, in other words, I think you're saying that competency-based learning systems make visible these invisible inequities and outcomes. Even as we see graduation rates increasing in urban areas, it might not be telling you the whole story. And when you actually can see these pretty stark differences in outcomes in competency-based systems, then you can start addressing them. But then you need to start addressing them. It seems like the other side of the coin is you might need to increase support and resources for students who do not have those competencies yet.
Absolutely. So when we you know, start this work of competency-based learning with schools, they quickly realize that the work goes far beyond just the work of a classroom. It starts to impact things like thinking about supports and interventions in a school, thinking about the way that a schedule is set up in a school. So, you know, teachers can start really small, but ideally, when schools engage in the work of setting up competency-based systems, it actually impacts everything that they do, from school culture to scheduling, to really thinking about opportunities for students outside of school. So it impacts sort of a whole school system.
Courtney, if a teacher interested in this wanted to start small and they were in the midst of planning a unit for later in the year and wanted it to be competency-based, what advice would you give them?
So first I would say start with the outcome. So it's really about backward design, right? So what are those pieces of skills and knowledge that you are aiming for students to be able to demonstrate by the end of the unit, and then planning backwards to think about what are the experiences that students are going to have that will lead up to them being able to demonstrate that skill, those skills and knowledge by the end of the unit. And then thinking even smaller than that about, you know, thinking about that level of formative assessment. So what are the different markers along the way that will give you a sense of where students are in moving toward those goals? And then, you know, sort of being ready for those questions that might arise in terms of the structure of your classroom when you get that that formative information back. What are you going to do for students who maybe are struggling a bit? What are you going to do for students who are moving ahead maybe a little bit faster than you thought that they might, or students who are moving ahead but might need some help thinking about how to deepen their understanding or how to dig a little bit deeper in terms of thinking about critical thinking skills or higher order thinking? And so really, really getting clear about what is it that you're hoping students are going to be able to demonstrate by the end, and then planning backward to make sure that there's some checks along the way that will ensure that students have an opportunity to demonstrate those skills over time.
Now, where would you point people to learn more about this if there are teachers who are thinking about striking out and implementing competency-based practices in their classroom, or for teachers who might be looking for resources to advocate for system-wide change in their schools?
So, as you mentioned, the organization I work for, Great Schools Partnership, we have several resources available on our website, but we also are the coordinators of the New England Secondary School Consortium, which hosts many, many, many resources, including presentations we've given in the past, webinars that have been hosted by both my colleagues and schools that we work with. New England Secondary School Consortium also has what we call the practice arm, which is called the League of Innovative Schools. And so there are many schools in Rhode Island and beyond that are part of the League of Innovative Schools, but we have a March conference every year. This year it's in Hartford, Connecticut, which we invite educators from all over the country and actually the world to come to. And we have quite a big turnout at that conference. And then for people who are members of the League of Innovative Schools, we have several different events that happen throughout the year that are hosted by us and also by the schools that we work with.
Courtney, these sound like great opportunities. Thank you for sharing them with our listeners. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you again for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at STUCNTRPodcast. And remember, students learn deeply when they are at the center.